a doctor in the house.
Doctor, doctor, give me the news. I got a bad case of loving you.
Doctor.
It's time for Advanced Medicine Monday with Dr. Rashid Batar.
I'm a doctor, not a bricklayer.
I'm a doctor, not a mechanic.
I'm a doctor, not a coal miner.
The doctor is in.
Taking on bureaucrats and corporations that would stand in the way of health freedom and making sense out of medical propaganda. The voice of health, freedom, and liberty, Robert Scott Bell.
Advanced Medicine Monday continues right now with the star of the hour, Dr. Rashid Batar, my friend. So good to see, I like to say see you, but I mean, I feel you here, man. The presence is there.
Thanks, Robert. It's always good to be back. And I understand you just got back from a long trip yourself from the West Coast.
Yeah, I was up in the Pac Northwest bringing the concept of health sovereignty back to anybody who would listen, a lot of the folks in the health food stores and such, and let them know about the 9 steps to keep the doctor away as well when they're always asking, well, what do we read? You know, here, that's the easiest question to answer. So they loved it, and I'm pleased that we could do that. I didn't realize when I was out there, there was some whooping cough issues. I did have one lady, a concerned mom at one of my lectures, asked me about her daughter who has a baby who decided she didn't want to vaccinate for the whooping cough. And this mother, or grandmother now, was very concerned. And I thought it was rather interesting because she worked in a health food store. So I just assumed sometimes people would know better, but not everybody's all the way there. So she was afraid. And I said, well, no, you should be applauding your daughter. This is terrific news. And we went through all the things we can do to address that. But now I come back and looks like it says this Seattle Times thing. You have it there. 77% of the outbreak cases are in fully vaccinated teenagers. Not partial, not non, but fully.
Yeah, which goes to validate our point that we've made, you know, since ever, we've always talked about the fact that the validity of this vaccination regimen that is being used, at least since 1991, since the National Vaccine Initiative, which was designed to stamp out childhood disease, supposedly, since the beginning of that National Vaccine Initiative, all we've seen is an increase in autism from 1 in 10,000 mm-hmm. in 1991 to 1 in 60-some kids now, versus looking at these other pathogenic, infectious types of issues that supposedly people are being vaccinated against, and The incidence just increases. The incidence of these diseases just increasing after vaccination. And it makes sense if you think about it, because a vaccine has an attenuated virus in there. You introduce this virus into the person, and then it's got all these preservatives that are going to suppress the immune system. So now you introduce an immunosuppressant along with an attenuated virus, and in so many people that attenuated virus isn't attenuated enough. And so what happens is it sets up the problem, and because the immune system is already deficient, it just becomes a rampant pathological, you know, infectious issue.
Yes.
And so this is not surprising to me at all.
It was a disaster waiting to happen. And although we perceive, and I think appropriately so, the immune system in a different light than those who vaccinate, this, you know, 77% failure rate, I mean, this was stunning because it's in a regular newspaper. It's not even the alternative or new media where they're actually acknowledging it. The headline says, Feds probe whooping cough epidemic, are vaccines pooping out? I mean, that's a question you would never see ever in a regular mm-hmm. newspaper. That seems like it's a natural news story, and yet it's happening. Now, why is this happening now? They're going to look, well, the vaccine stopped working. Is the new one not as good as the old one? I would say inevitably we're seeing the generational decline here. The artificiality of the suppression in prior generations where they still had some level of resiliency to deal with the garbage. These teenagers have less resiliency at all on any level.
Yeah, I would actually say, Roberts, because it's, again, what we've talked about before 2012, the universal consciousness awakening, and there are more and more people realizing the house of cards. That's a lot of people realizing that house of cards is actually a house of cards, just put it that way.
Yeah, well, exactly. Yes, the consciousness shift is on. To see a headline like this, and I think that's another important point to make, because every week somebody's going to say, look, we're not making any headway, Monsanto's still here, but look, we see a lot of evidence that things are happening that shouldn't be allowed to happen, and they are, which is evidence of the fact that they are losing control over all that they once believed they had control over because of that participation, the willingness to participate, maybe in ignorance, but now it's very difficult for them to hold this so-called tide of consciousness back.
Yeah, and you got to remember that every one of these individuals, no matter what their agenda is, they all have a child, a grandchild, a niece, a nephew, you know, somebody that they love. At some point, you have to start asking yourself, don't these people that are making these insinuations and making these outrageous claims, that don't they have some aspect of reality that they're dealing with? That don't they have some type of...
I think what you're asking for is, do they have a shred of humanity that comes peeking back out occasionally?
Well, it's kind of like, you know, you don't want to say something wrong because, God forbid, that wrong thing happens. And if you're sitting there saying, oh, there's no such thing as vaccine injury, then aren't they going to realize that their own children become susceptible, their own grandchildren become susceptible?
They're at risk.
And in fact, at the Institute of Medicine and Simpsonwood meeting that took place in Georgia back in 2000.
Yeah, the Simpsonwood retreat, that was famous. I mean, they have actual audio recordings we played years ago on here, but and refresh everybody what they said. It was horrific.
Yeah, it's the whole transcripts have been made publicized. And interestingly enough, the president of the Institute of Medicine, his name escapes me now, at the time when they asked the epidemiologist to review the data, the epidemiologist came back and said that there's not only a statistical significance, it's a very significant statistical significance as far as the correlation between autism and the thimerosal. And they told them to go back and read and analyze the data. And the epidemiologist responded that it doesn't matter how many times we look at the data, how many times we analyze it. You can analyze it upside down, backwards, forwards. It doesn't matter. It's still significantly significant. And, oh, I'm sorry.
That was good. Significantly significant. I like that.
Statistically significant is what I meant to say.
But it's both. I mean, the thing is, it is so significant. I mean, they were just... The audio transcripts were horrific because they were acknowledging this and even laughing about it, chuckling about it.
Right. And then the president of the Institute of Medicine at that time, who just had a grandchild born, in the transcript makes some type of a statement. And I don't exactly remember the verbatim language, but he says something to the extent that, well, this information can't be made public. We need to reanalyze the data. Right. However, he also talks about his grandchild having been born and says, my grandchild's not going to get any of these vaccines. That's the president of the Institute of Medicine.
Yes.
So, again, at some point, people are going to sit there, those people that are making these types of ludicrous statements that this stuff is safe and it's okay to give to children. But, you know, now you look at their own child, their own grandchild. Are they giving it to them? There's the litmus test.
And that is the thing that's coming home to roost as more and more children who once you thought had escaped the damage. I mean, the illusion was always there. If your child didn't go into the autism spectrum, that somehow you had escaped the damage. But I have dealt with, in my time as a homeopath, men and women in their elder years, even to their 70s, that were showing signs of vaccine damage throughout their entire life, that I literally was having to address what was introduced in their early childhood. And
Robert,
yes.
The reason for the increase in cancer incidence, the increase in cardiovascular disease in the younger patient population, it used to be unheard of a person in their 20s or early 30s having a myocardial infarction, but now we see that. And I said this over a decade ago, you want to see the true effects of vaccines? Start looking at the incidence of cancer. Start looking at the incidence of cardiovascular disease in the younger patient population. And that's exactly what we're seeing. Last year in 2011, I had six patients that I treated that were under the age of 25 and over the age of 16. So 16 to 25 or, you know, 12 to 21 is considered to be the least incidence of cancer. That's a young population. I had between 16 and 25, I had six patients with stage 4 cancer with no risk factors. I had two patients that had lung cancer. One was a 24-year-old race car driver, no smoking history. Now, of course, he's, you know, around combustion of fossil fuel because he's a race car driver who died of lung cancer. Six wow. different patients. And look back in 10 years ago, it was very rare to see somebody in their 20s to have some type of a cancer.
Yes.
Seeing more and more of it because of the vaccines.
Yeah, when I go out there, and that was even in when I was in the Pacific Northwest this week, still people shake their heads when I start running through these stats of children, young girls with autoimmune diagnoses, rheumatoid arthritis diagnoses, and you're thinking, what the hell is going on? And I joke about my own upbringing, and I say, aha, you know, I got my old age diseases out of the way early. But my old age diseases were not – I didn't leap into autoimmunity. I had, you know, highly reactive and hyperreactive immune system. But now it's gotten much worse, and it's growing across the spectrum. And as you said, it's impacting now and affecting those people who were in a state of denial for economic purposes, and it's coming home. So this is another reason for the transformation that's happening out there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that as time goes on, we're going to see, even if we start to decrease the incidence of vaccines, as time goes on, the population, wherever it peaked with the vaccinations since 1991, we're going to see that patient population, that demographics, actually increase in incidence of chronic disease.
Oh, yes. And the thing is, even if we stopped all vaccines today, we would still see the rise based on that population and the exactly. deficient population following it. So we've got a long way to go to recover. Now, that's not to say there isn't a way to accelerate recovery. I mean, I think that's the beauty of the 9 steps to keep the doctor away as a guidebook as well. It's not waiting around for a number of generations, although we acknowledge that in general, it takes that time. But any individual has the capacity, through aggressive use of the principles that are that basically run the whole universe, we apply them in our own lives, and then we can see miracles occur.
Well, Robert, I'm glad you brought that up, and I appreciate the plug on the book. It's actually interesting that you just made that statement, because David Wilcock, who wrote the New York Times bestseller, The Source Field Investigations, he's actually been on the History Channel and has his own show there, too. Just got an email from him. I met him at one of his conferences about a year and a half ago, and it was really nice to receive that email from him. He wants me to come out to Los Angeles and film a segment for either his show or his website. I'm not sure what it is regarding health. He wants to do something with me regarding steps that people can do for their own wellness and proactive steps to achieve health. And I really thought that was a really big compliment coming from somebody like Wilcock.
Because fantastic, yes.
It was interesting because he obviously knew the stuff about from the 9 steps as well, because he got a copy of the book. And mm-hmm. So I was excited when I learned about that. Just heard about it on Friday. One of my staff members gave me the email. So,
well, the gift of healing keeps on giving. And I think that's the empowering message of many in the book. That indeed, despite the disaster out there in modern medicine and the environment and all of these things, it's not that we're without hope, and it's even beyond the hope, the absolute ability to take or regain control of our lives by, you know, learning the principles and then, of course, applying them. It's not enough to learn them, as you know. Okay, I've learned them. Isn't that great? Oh, what are you going to do about it, right? And that's the point of the Advanced Medicine Seminars as well. Next one in Houston, Texas, November 16th and 17th. And I look forward to seeing you. In fact, I was telling people about it up at the Northwest Conference there, and I know some people in that area in Houston. They're excited about it as well already. So lots of cool stuff going to be happening next month.
Yeah, and it's exciting, too, that all but one time slot, the May conference in Chicago, mm-hmm. the only one that we didn't have people scheduled for, and now that one we have people scheduled for. So it is going to be a tremendous event. We are already having more and more people get scheduled for the Houston event, so I really encourage people to come, and Robert will be there, and I'll be there, and a lot of other good lectures yep. will be there.
We'll be talking about more of that each week as we approach it, the November 16th through 17th. Healthcare providers of all stripes, so to speak, all backgrounds are welcome, as well as lay folks. And you listen to the Robert Scott Bell Show, we want to see you out there in Houston. So more information on that, the link is up in the show notes at robertscottbell.com, as well as all of the links to the 9 steps to keep the doctor away and Dr. Bitar. When we come back from this break, we're going to talk about a compounding pharmacies. It seems like they've been targeted by the FDA for a long time now. Is there an ulterior motive? There's a drug that they made for an injection that is causing some form of meningitis. I'm going to ask Dr. Bitar about that after this on Advanced Medicine Monday, right here on the Robert Scott Bell Show.
Great heavens! What kind of radio show is this?
The Robert Scott Bell Show.
On bureaucrats and corporations that would stand in the way of health freedom. Here's Robert.
Yeah, there was a time in our history not too long ago where all pharmacies were compounding pharmacies, and I'll hazard a guess that a lot of my lay audience here listening to us now and Dr. Bitar, Advanced Medicine Monday, doesn't even know what a compounding pharmacy is. I mean, they just go to a pharmacy if they go. And what does it mean? What's the difference? Why would the FDA have any interest at all in putting them all out of business? And is there a legitimate reason? Is there something going on? Because there's this scary story about meningitis associated with this, I don't know, what is this, steroid shot or something? You see the story there? 7 dead and spreading U.S. meningitis outbreak.
Yeah, well, meningitis, essentially the term, if you break it down, meningitis is the inflammation of the meninges, which are the basically the coverings of the nerves, if you will, the meninges. And meningitis is typically meningococcemia, which is a bacteria, but it can be a viral. It can be a viral meningitis or a fungal meningitis. And in this particular case, they're reporting that there's some type of steroid that has been made by the compounding pharmacies that have been contaminated with a fungal spore or with some type of fungus that's causing inflammation of the meninges. Now, First thing is that when you have meningitis, by definition, whether it's viral or bacterial, and honestly, I haven't really heard of fungal, but
yeah, no, this is a new one to me. I mean, I'm thinking these people are really in rough shape because, you know, fungal species don't typically reproduce rapidly. Like, we know the seriousness of a bacterial meningitis. You don't mess around. A viral, it seems to be less prolific in terms of causing imminent and rapid death. Not me taken lightly, but the point is fungal. And I'm thinking they're injecting steroids. What do steroids do? As far as I know, they suppress the immune system.
Well, and again, remember, what type of patient population is going to be susceptible to a fungus? Obviously, a fungus is an opportunistic pathogen. We talk about this in the 7 toxicities,
how
third toxicity is considered to be the opportunistics. But fungus is typically more opportunistic than the other types. In other words, you have to have a suppressed immune system to actually have a problem with the fungus. And now you're giving somebody a steroid. So if the steroid is going to further suppress an immune system, so of course anybody's going to be susceptible. But to blame it on a compounding pharmacy that's putting these steroids together, well, is it possible that they could have a contamination? Absolutely. It's happened before. I'm sure it'll happen again. And as with anything else, you know, you have so many cars on the road, you're bound to have somebody having an accident. You have so many flights up there, you're bound to have a plane that goes down occasionally. So you have so many vials of compounding pharmacists put together. Sure, it's possible that it could get contaminated. But to say that this is something that is related to a compounding pharmacy, I mean, just without knowing all the facts, Robert, again, we have to preface it by saying that it is possible that anything could happen. But to say that it's compounding pharmacies and that all of them should be shut down, that's somewhat oxymoronic. I mean, you know, it's like saying that, okay, because one doctor cut off the wrong leg, every doctor should be now put out of business because they just can't tell the right from the left.
Well, you know, that's an important point. I mean, we don't hold back on when we talk about the medical profession or any profession if we feel it's doing wrong. But I've seen an agenda by the FDA that I think is somewhat suspect in my mind, because if they want to paint the broad brushstroke, because this thing is happening, and listen, we're not saying it's a great thing, but why would they be after compounding pharmacists or pharmacies? I mean, I've seen that there's a competition issue with the established drug companies that don't like these little guys cutting in on their business.
Absolutely, Robert. That's why you said, you know, that you think it's suspect. It's highly suspect, because that's exactly what happens. The compounding pharmacy versus the traditional pharmacy. The traditional pharmacy markets a drug by a pharmaceutical company that spent, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars marketing it and taking it to distribution, et cetera, getting it approved, and now the drug is out there. Compounding pharmacy, on the other hand, by definition, the difference between compounding and traditional pharmacies, a compounding pharmacy is only allowed to take a drug and make that particular drug for an individual that a doctor specifically writes a prescription for. So case in point is our TD-DMPS, the transdermal DMPS that I testified in front of the U.S. Congress on May 6, 2004. You know, it's been, 8 years now. We were told by the FDA, we were contacted by the FDA and said that what you guys are doing is illegal because DMPS is not approved for manufacturing, and you're manufacturing this. Now, what does that mean? That means you have a bunch of vials and you make hundreds of thousands of, you know, a particular type of substance. Well, they said DMPS is not approved for manufacturing, meaning that you can't make thousands upon thousands upon thousands of bottles of a certain product. However, it is approved for compounding, which means that now if a doctor writes a prescription for that particular patient, the compounding pharmacy can actually take that product and make a drug, make a whatever, you know, a potion, a lotion, a pill, or whatever, mm-hmm. and they can send it. But you can't mass produce it. So you have to have a specific order from a specific doctor for a specific patient, and then you can, quote, compound it. You can't mass produce it. And so the big pharmaceutical industries obviously have an agenda because they don't want a small compounding pharmacy to have a specific product they're going to make for the doctor mm-hmm. because it prevents their mass manufactured pills from being disseminated as widely. Because why would anybody want to use a manufactured drug for the masses when they could have a personalized?
Right. That, you know, that's the point I want to bring up here. It's again, we're not coming out suddenly going, yes, we're hooray drugs. But if you're going to utilize a drug, wouldn't you think it would be preferable for a doctor and a pharmacist to work together on a very specialized and individualized focal point rather than the one-size-fits-all approach?
Exactly.
Because as you've said as well, if you're using a drug more than a week, you pretty much failed. You know, it's like a stopgap. Get in there, get out as fast as you can, whereas now it's become, like I said, the market where you're on drugs for permanent sake, and they don't like these compounders coming in and giving them temporary stuff.
Yeah, and not that all compounding drugs are temporary, but the point is it is specific to an individual, and I think that's been the big issue is because, unfortunately, even the doctors that are utilizing compounding pharmacies, you know, using a specific drug formulation for a specific individual, even there, they have the same flaw because they use it continuously. But the whole idea, like you said, Robert, is to get in, get out quick, and be done with it and stop the medication. And it's an agenda because they can't, you know – take 100,000 vials of a certain product and give it to everybody else because, of course, there's no such thing as biological individuality or genetic predisposition or uniqueness mm-hmm. in the eyes of the pharmaceutical industry. Everybody gets the same thing. And as you know, that mm-hmm. not everybody's DNA is different.
Yep.
Everybody's DNA is unique. And so how can we make the assumption that everybody's going to respond to the same drug in the same way? It is absolutely a ludicrous concept right. to think that you can take tremendous number of people and give them the same exact thing and expect them to have the same exact result.
You know, healing is about individualization. It's about, you know, indicate this is you, this is your experience. It's unique. How many times do we have to say this? We still have to say it a lot because they're not getting it out there. And we come back to the steroid injection to begin with. Why? Why? This was used to treat what? Back pain. Why not consider, you know, increasing omega-3 essential fats? You've developed some interesting things. What about? And I covered this on yesterday's show. I even talked briefly to Dr. Nick Gonzalez just a little bit before about the use. We now know about the cannabinoid receptors, right? The mm-hmm. cannabis. Yep. That these things are dealing with pain much better with no toxicity and no addiction. Why not that? Well, competition, money, what is it, economic? What's going on out there?
Well, Robert, you know, before even talking about any of that stuff, I mean, actually, if you're in California, you can get marijuana a lot easier than you can anywhere else in the United States for
medical needs.
For medicinal use, yeah. Absolutely. But, you know, you mentioned a couple of different things, and of course, we've developed some things. In fact, I think I sent some for your wife to use. Different things that can help with pain or with back issues. But let's even forget about using any type of therapeutic like that. How about just using a good chiropractor? Even a massage therapist can help to relax the muscles in those areas and break up the spasm and break up that cycle. There's so many things that can be done. So why go to a steroid? You're absolutely right. And again, I'm not trying to defend the compounding pharmacist here because to me, a doctor that writes for a steroid mm-hmm. – even if it's personalized, it's still a problem. I mean, the overall view, it's still a problem. But again, what's the agenda of the FDA going after the compounding pharmacies as opposed to look at the issue in itself?
Now, remember what I was talking about at the last advanced medicine seminar as well, and this is a big part of my presentation to teach people, listen, if you don't care, for instance, for your gastrointestinal health, right? The inflammation that's caused, the explosion, the napalm from vaccines and antibiotics and all the other garbage – The docs, when they run out of antibiotics, they start throwing steroid type hormonal treatments, the prednisone, for instance. These are all immunosuppressive and could be addictive because they have to use more and more and more until they exhaust them. And yet, as you point out, why not try everything else first? They often try that first, then they give up after it's a disaster, or they go to the colorectal surgeon for a horrific, barbaric attack on their intestinal system.
Yeah, absolutely, because the whole concept should be very simply do the least invasive, the least harmful treatment first. If that doesn't work, then go up the ladder. Mm-hmm. But if something very simple works, something that's not invasive, something that's not going to obstruct the normal metabolic processes and inhibit the natural pathways, then that by definition should be the first and foremost attempt to break that cycle of pain or discomfort or whatever the case may be. Mm-hmm. Because if you start off with the big napalm, you're going to end up having all those side effects, and you're going to create invariably, almost guaranteed, more complications and more difficulty for yourself. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's the same type of thing. If you have a problem with your car engine, why not try to see if, well, you know, can maybe changing the fuel, making an improvement on the fuel make a difference, instead of saying, okay, you know what, I'm going to pull out the whole freaking engine and I'm going to, you know, take every valve apart and try to figure out the problem. Mm-hmm. It doesn't make any sense.
No. What makes sense is you listen to Advanced Medicine Monday every week right here on the Robert Scott Bell Show with Dr. Rasha Bittar. All the links are up at robertscottbell.com. Give us a call anytime. Leave a message, 866-939-BELL, 866-939-2355. When we come back, we're going to talk about another of the toxicities. This one coming from the sky. Evidently, a politician in Sweden has admitted something that no other politician wants to admit. What is it? Stand by. We'll talk about it with Dr. Bittar after this.
The Robert Scott Bell Show.
The Robert Scott Bell Show.
Rocking the health world through the power of radio. It's the Robert Scott Bell Show.
If you have not read The 9 Steps to Keep the Doctor Away, what are you waiting for? Just get it. And get one. Hey, holiday season's coming up. Get one for other family members or friends. They will thank you. Change your life for the better. Dr. Bittar is here as we do this every week. And guess what? A couple of weeks from now, I think we're going to have an addition to the Robert Scott Bell Show weekly updates from your good friend and now my friend as well, Ty Bollinger. Isn't this exciting?
That's awesome. That is going to be fantastic.
Yeah, we may be doing out of the box, outside the box Wednesdays possibly here.
That's fantastic. In fact, Ty is just a wealth of information. He's got a lot of other components outside of the health industry, obviously, mm-hmm. too, that would benefit a lot of the listeners. And it's interesting, his background, he's actually a CPA. He is not a doctor. No. He's not a natural healer. He's actually...
He's better. He's a CPA. What? What?
Yeah. No, actually, he wrote the book because of his parents, and mm-hmm. his parents were injured by toxicity, ended up suffering from cancer, and as a legacy to his parents, he wrote the book, Cancer Step Outside the Box. But it'll be great to have him because he has a lot of really cool information. I remember asking him about this tax strategy mm-hmm. and accelerated cost segregation that another accountant had kind of told me about, and we were talking about that with my old office, how we could utilize it. And I was told by 99% of accountants have never heard of it. So I called Ty up and I'm asking about this. And I said, I can't remember the exact term. It's accelerating. He goes, yeah, accelerated cost segregation. Yeah, it's a great strategy. So I was like, okay, well, you know, that's the type of CPA you want. So anyway, if you don't like a show on Wednesdays, you can always use him as a CPA.
I'll tell him you said that. No, it's going to be great. We've always been outside the box here, but he's going to make us go so far outside the box, we won't even be able to find the box, and that's going to be awesome. I'm looking forward to that. Absolutely. Now, I teased a story here. This one comes off of Natural News, and you've heard all the wild conspiracy theories, as they call them, about chemtrails. And I look up at the sky, and I see – my kids know the difference between a contrail and a chemtrail. I taught them that, basic atmospheric 101, when you see an airplane at certain altitudes, and this little contrail, it dissipates almost as fast as it creates, but then there are these dissipating, slowly dispersing cloud-like things. You've seen them, Dr. Bittar.
Oh, all the time. In fact, we try to get inside a house when we see them.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, I don't want to be under that. Why is that? Why don't we want to be? Well, it turns out Somebody in an official government capacity did a no-no. They actually acknowledge it. Swedish Green Party leader Pernilla Hagberg out of Sweden, in the newspaper up there, actually acknowledged that their sprayings up there and around the world, a joint endeavor by the U.S. CIA and the U.S. National Security Agency, NSA, as well as the Swedish government in her own country where she's acknowledging this, they're saying to modify atmospheric conditions via deliberate aerosol sprayings to save the planet. And when you look at what's in there, they got viruses up there they're spraying. I'm just thinking, talking with Dr. Batar on the break. I said, what the hell? Is there a viral deficiency disease on planet Earth that they're spraying viruses up? How is this saving the planet?
Yeah, you know, the justification of insane people, I guess, by definition, must be insanity. Hmm. Because using chemical components, viral fragments, viruses, metals such as aluminum, barium, all these different things that we've seen being accumulated within the soils throughout the planet, it makes sense why all these things are increasing. But again, the question is why and how do they justify that? How do they think that's saving the planet? I mean, it's that's just I'd really like to hear that explanation.
I would do one thing I have heard bandied about is that they throw these reflective metals up there like aluminum or whatever so that they can the sunlight will bounce off so we don't have the global warming. But of course, that's disputed as well. The whole idea of these measurements have been corrupted because there was an agenda to set up a carbon trading scheme so that Al Gore can become wealthier trading things that may not even exist. So if that's the case, okay, all right, but why the viruses again? That says, all right, maybe what they're trying to do, save the planet, what do? We got to kill off three-fourths of the human population. That's, again, a eugenics program.
Yeah, it's any way you try to explain it, Robert, it just will not hold water.
It's amazing. But this does fall under one of the seven toxicities, does it not?
Absolutely. Second toxicity, the persistent organic pollutants.
Yep. Second
toxicity. Absolutely.
So we got POP, persistent organic pollutants. Again, you think you can control for everything? No, you can't. But what I've urged for many years is that you control for what you genuinely have control over. And then, you know, listen, pray about the rest, whatever you got to do. But if you control for the mass majority that you can, you have the ability to withstand a lot of assault. And I think that's the thing about the strengthening here we're trying to encourage you.
Yeah, and actually, Robert, let me bring up something here because this is a great point you just brought up. Mm-hmm. You know, control what you can't control. Now, persistent organic pollutants, they're called persistent organic pollutants because they persist in the body. It's very difficult for the body to get rid of them. The chemicals that the body can get rid of, they don't fall into that category of persistent organic pollutants. But what can you do? Well, obviously, if you have access to a doctor that does ozone autohemotherapy, ultraviolet blood irradiation, those types of things will end up helping to break down these persistent organic pollutants and get them out of the body. We actually have a product that we have developed that helps to also facilitate the breakdown of some of these persistent organic pollutants. But if you don't have access to a doctor that has the ozone autohemotherapy or, you know, any unique kind of product that will help to get rid of these persistent organic pollutants, which, by the way, if you upregulate phase 1 and phase 2 of your liver and the P450 mm-hmm. system, you're going to end up helping to facilitate some of those persistent organic pollutants out. But again, by definition, they're called persistent organic pollutants because the liver can't get rid of them. But start using an infrared sauna, not a regular sauna, not a heat sauna, but an infrared sauna.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You can use that. If you can use an infrared sauna, it's lower heat. You will sweat not as profusely as you would in a regular dry sauna. But the infrared sauna is really amazing because it does help to facilitate the breakdown of some of these persistent organic pollutants. And so in our patient population, we encourage patients to do the infrared sauna and especially then do the ozone autohemotherapy. And this process is really facilitated as far as removing these persistent organic pollutants.
Yeah, and a lot of the things, strategies we share on the Robert Scott Bell Show, you've written about as well in your book. And we talk about far infrared heat sauna is one of my favorites as well. Their homeopathy, of course, you know, we utilize to help mobilize the defenses against things that the body doesn't know what the hell to do with these things. I mean, honestly, think about it. All the synthetic compounds, and some have argued that there are millions, not just thousands, in the span of the last 100 years added to the environment. The body is going, wait, I don't have the enzyme to deal with this. I mean, normally you know what's a metabolic waste or normal things in the environment. You start compounding these things, the body goes, I have no idea what that is.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, I can't believe I didn't even mention the homeopathic aspect because even though I don't know much about homeopathy, our MTE8, which is a homeopathic, and MTE5, which is also homeopathic, which is applied intravenously,
Yeah, it's a brilliant strategy, in fact, Dr. Batar, doing that because you're going to mobilize it. But you're doing that prior to what?
Prior to giving ozone autohemotherapy or ultraviolet blood irradiation for the MTE5 and for the MTE8 before we give the chelators.
Yeah, and it's excellent. Like I said, you're really directing the metabolism with the homeopathic signatures that are coming in this way. So hats off. I'm not surprised that you get it so well. And,
highly effective, Robert. Yeah. Unbelievably effective. It's actually increased our yield on some of these things. People can actually feel the metallic components in their tongue. They can taste it. They can feel some of these chemicals. I've had it myself, obviously, and it's amazing. You start doing this IV, and within like 3 or 4 minutes, you can actually feel the chemicals in your mouth. You can taste them in your mouth. And not everybody can, because some people don't have as many, but you know, especially if you have an exposure, you can feel it and you just want to spit.
Oh, lovely. It's the taste sensation you don't want. Go see Dr. Batar. No, that's not a good commercial, is it? No, but the thing is, we want to get this stuff out. Desperately want to.
The reason you taste it is because that's exactly what's happening. It's coming everywhere.
It's a good thing, really. And as we say, this is a fascinating discussion because it goes deeper into the things we do cover pretty much every week in various ways. But the discussion of the persistent organic pollutants, why they're called that, how to really dig them out, so to speak. And it isn't that we're taking a shovel. We're really working with the body's energetic intelligence, metabolism, etc., to stimulate activity and support that activity, not just indiscriminately, callously, but really taking the time to do it right.
Well, it's one of those things that's it's so crucial to resolving the toxicity issue, is so crucial to achieving health that you can't ignore it. And if you ignore it, then you obviously are going to risk not getting better. And more often than not, that's exactly what happens.
Well, we want to get you better, so we're going to get you even better after this break. Stand by. Remember, the next Advanced Medicine Seminar coming up in Houston, Texas, November 16th through 17th. I've got the link up right to it, advancedmedicineseminars.com. Of course, Dr. Batar's best-selling, international best-selling book, The 9 Steps to Keep the Doctor Away. If you haven't gotten it, this is the season. Just get it, give it out. And we'll be back to heal even more after this.
You're listening to The Robert Scott Bell Show. The Robert Scott Bell Show.
Great questions came through at the Advanced Medicine Seminar in Philadelphia. The first one, next one coming up in Houston next month. And I feel like Karnak the Magnificent, the old Johnny Carson thing. I remembered we had one in the can that we didn't get to play yet. And I think this will time it out, and you'll understand why I bring up the old Johnny Carson skit.
Tell me your name.
Tara. What I would like to know is, as far as homeopathically, how could somebody address the toxic burden that their child has, maybe when they're young, but also, say, if you don't understand or you don't learn about it until the child is a teenager, maybe they're 10, 12, 13, what can you do to address the toxic burden that they have?
Yeah, how appropriate was that question? We already sort of answered it.
Yeah, actually, Robert, it's funny that person is a patient of mine, and we covered her a couple of months ago, if you recall, about a lady who came to my office from the show who had been wheelchair ridden for, I don't know, 5 or 6 years, and she kind of told her story at the Advanced Medicine Seminar, so it's kind of cool that you pulled that particular question up. But, you know, that's a person who's asking a question. She's gone through an incredible
transition
and is a walking, living miracle in herself. So it was interesting she asked that question. And notice the question wasn't even about herself or condition that affected her.
Yes.
It was about the next generation.
I know. She was amazing. She was from someone who had been bound down and not able to walk to where she was, and just a real bright light, a real inspiration. And I was pleased to connect. And yeah, it was a great question. And yes, the homeopathic's critical, like we mentioned in the last segment. If you can't, you know, get in to do an intravenous session like that, there are oral homeopathics we talk about on the Healing Revolution with Dr. King on Fridays. But yeah, it's a great adjunct to everything because it does mobilize the body's metabolism to focus its action in a certain way, and it does facilitate it. We don't here, even as a homeopath, we don't do that. I don't do that in a vacuum. You know, that's why we talk about everything here. That's why there's not one step. There's 9 steps. In fact, there could be more, but that was the great thing about all the practitioners that were there at the event. Everybody had different angles on it, but it all was congruent.
Absolutely, it was. Everybody was in on the same sheet of music. But I just want to correct you, Robert. You were wrong about something you said. There's only 9 steps. That's it.
Okay, okay. Well, you know, I just wanted to acknowledge there are some people going, nah, you forgot 9A or B, you know. So there's going to be somebody out there.
No, of course, you know. I mean, it started off as 3 steps, and then you got 9 steps because, you know, that's all I've discovered so far. But I'm sure there's other ones out there that I haven't discovered yet.
What are you trying to do? Complicate things, Robert? What are you doing here? So, yeah. Anyway, hey, look, every week we want to give you, the listener, some kind of insight into some particular medical or nutritional or other issue. This week we decided to talk about the blood issue, the blood thinning, the anticoagulants that are out there, and there are a lot of rat poison still floating around there, yet there are other options. Dr. Batari, you'd like to let everybody know.
Yeah, actually, when we talk about rat poison, that is not being facetious or sarcastic. It truly is rat poison. Coumadin is rat poison. So look at the ingredients of rat poison, and you will see that warfarin is an ingredient of rat poison, the major ingredient, in fact, Coumadin. So what can you do naturally? There's many things that you can do. Typically, from a traditional standpoint, taking a baby aspirin is something people say. And yes, you can do that, but there are certain other components that may not be the best when you do that. Now, if it's an emergent situation, somebody's having, you know, dull chest pain, angina, shortness of breath, diaphoresis, they're sweating, they've got nausea, that's most likely a acute myocardial infarction, a heart attack that the person's having. And yes, I would say grab a baby aspirin and chew it immediately. That, for life-ensuring measure or a, you know, acute preventive measure, that is something that you can do. But on a regular basis, if you have a coagulatory type issue, if you have a coagulopathy, if you have a platelet aggregation issue, if you have thick blood, a viscosity issue, if your doctor's saying that you need to be in a blood thinner, instead of doing what they're saying to do, and again, you know, you're not my patient if you're listening to this and if you have this issue, so I'm not making a medical claim, but I am telling you what I would do and what I have some of the patients that I'm taking care of do, and this would be something that you need to, again, with all the, what do you call them, Robert, the disclaimers?
Right, all the disclaimers about rat poison, right?
Exactly. But, you know, I mean, you got to remember, somebody, you have to make sure that you don't do this in the wrong order. So Here's a solution. The solution is you take your pinky finger and you get fresh ginger, and about the size of your nail bed, you cut off a piece of fresh ginger and you chop it up into, you know, dice it up, and then you dice cross-sectionally and dice that up and just chop it up into real little small segments. And you take that and you put it in a small cup and put boiling hot water in there. Let it soak for maybe 10, 15 minutes. It'll kind of make a warm tea, and then drink that tea. And then you'll see the components of the ginger that you chopped up at the bottom. Scoop that up with a spoon and eat it. Chew it up, eat it. That is the best anticoagulant that you can ever have. And do that once a day if you need to. Most often, once every other day is sufficient. But if you have some kind of an acute coagulopathy, do that. And you will see your blood thin and naturally, with everything balanced, without any of the side effects, without spontaneous bleedings and epitaxis and all that other type of stuff. You're not going to have any bruising or any of those other types of spontaneous bleeds that a lot of people suffer from when they're taking Coumadin. So look into that. It's a very, very effective way of thinning the blood and improving your own vascular integrity.
Well, and no risk of dangerous bleed outs or, let's say, other drug interactions, because that's always the concern. Like, I've had people come to me, I think I might have even told the story with you on the air, of a dear friend who came to me who was literally internal bleeding. I couldn't believe what was going on. I asked him, what drugs did the doctor give him? And, of course, he was on one of the rat poisons along with aspirin every day. And I was looking at this, and I was like, I read some of these journals and then these drug inserts, and I don't know that that was a great combination. Let's just put it lightly. And he was, you know, he was bleeding out. Now, we got it stopped. There were homeopathic things I could do at the time. But there's a lot of irresponsibility happening there that's very dangerous that you don't question your doctor on these things.
Yeah, you have to absolutely be the most important protector of your own health. You have to be judicious about the types of advice that you take. And if you're not, remember, it's not the doctor's fault, because if you were foolish enough to take a doctor's advice blindly, it's your own fault. I have said this to my patients, that don't believe it just because I've said it. I don't care who says it. Do your own homework, do your own research. And if your doctor becomes offended because you won't take his word and goes and, you know, because you're looking up stuff, then, you know, pretty much you need to go and find yourself another doctor.
Mm. Well said, well said. Well, no, it's a great, great tip as well, and there are many more in the 9 steps to keep the doctor away. And you'll learn even more if you show up in person in Houston Texas. And that's November 16th and 17th, a Friday, Saturday. And it's going to be an awesome, awesome event. We look forward to seeing you out there. And remember, if you can go back and listen to the archives, but Dr. Batar, you can mention it again, the whole reason why you have the healthcare providers, and again, all backgrounds coming together. This is not just MDs, DOs. Anybody that's a healthcare provider, attend both days. Plan to be there for both days.
Yeah, absolutely, because the first day is really the one that's specific for the healthcare providers, but that's a minor issue. The reason we're doing this is to let the world know, let the general public know, and the doctors are there only so that on the second day, the doctors can now be introduced to the people so that the treatments that they're going to need or want or questions that they're going to ask, those same doctors that I attended the first day that we're going to give them the tools on how to help some of these patients, they will be there able to network and talk and answer questions to with the general public, but we will cover certain material with the general public in a formal manner with presentations. And it was really well received last time. And the goal is that within a year from when we started, which was in September in Philadelphia, by the time we get back to Philadelphia, notice, Robert, we held this at the convention center. There was a reason for that because next year, 1 year anniversary, I want to be able to host 3,000-5,000 people mm-hmm. at the same event. So the whole thing is we want to cascade it and get it bigger and bigger at each event. And the general material will be the same that's being presented, but you have to have a basic foundation. This is to get everybody's foundation even. There's so many people that have different ideas and understandings of really what's going on. We want to empower everybody with certain general knowledge so that they never become a victim again.
Beautiful, beautiful. And with that, we're going to wrap up today's Advanced Medicine Seminar. Thanks again to Dr. Nick Gonzalez. Thank you to Dr. Rasha Batar. As always, check it out. All the links are up there. Get the 9 steps to keep the doctor away. Plan to be in Houston November 16th and 17th. And do remember, this is the God's honest truth. The power to heal is yours.